things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
All right, Donut has laid down. We're ready.
We're all cozied in.
All set to go.
He's being especially emotionally dependent.
Oh.
These past couple days.
Is he trying to be an emotional support pet?
I think he is.
My sweet boy.
I know. He's such a good fatty cat boy.
Oh, big floof.
What's new? How's your week?
Oh my gosh. It has been a wild week. I'm off this week. I have PTO because we're trying to get the house ready. And I've moved 8 tons of dirt.
That is not an exaggeration.
With my husband by hand. And it is Wednesday.
You didn't use, like, shovels?
I mean, we use shovels, but, like, most people would use, like, a bobcat.
Oh! No. I imagine you guys
handfuls scooping of dirt.
And I'm like, oh my god, that is impressive.
Oh my. I would be in a whole different state of mind if I had to move 8 tons of dirt with my
bare
one cup size hands. No way.
Not an efficient way to move dirt.
No. How was your week?
Well, not as dirty as yours.
Lord.
Yeah. Today's theme of the week is setting boundaries.
Which is a good
life lesson to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love telling other people to set boundaries. It's like, it brings me joy.
Yeah, you're good at boundaries. Not only are you good at setting boundaries, you're good at keeping boundaries, which I think is really the struggle.
I think I went through such a weird time in college where I didn't have any boundaries at all. And I found myself in situations where other people around me were, like,
codependent.
Yeah, and, like, suffering because I didn't have boundaries.
Uh-huh.
So my roommate would be like, what are you doing? Why are we doing this? Because my not having any boundaries would affect her life in our apartment.
Sure.
And I think it was those, like, time frames when I was like, shit, I should probably not do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And boundaries have been a struggle for me all of my life. So it's something that I'm just super aware of because I'm constantly telling myself, is this within your boundary or no?
Right. Room on your plate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you have room for this?
I just need to know.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's the name of the game. I also have had a really exciting week because, as we all know, I very easily lose my place while scrolling through my, like, typed up notes.
Yeah.
And then I remembered my tablet's a touch screen and I can just use my finger.
Oh, what have you been doing this whole time?
Just clicking the down arrow, but I'll accidentally click the bar so it'll go all the way to the bottom.
Oh.
So we found a good workaround for that.
Nice. Yeah. That technology.
I'm saying.
Man.
Boy.
It must have been designed by a Gen Zer.
It was really a game changer for me. I was very excited about it.
Meanwhile, I'm still over here with my printed pieces of paper.
You're just a classic kind of gal.
I live in constant fear of technology revolting against me, where I would somehow manage to select and backspace and all of my work would be gone in the middle of our story, which would be the worst. I live in a constant state of anxiety. So I find ways to avoid the worst case scenario. Type 6, hi.
No. What up, Enneagram?
Oh, what else is going on with you?
Not a whole lot. Really, I found out my life path number.
Ooh.
In numerology.
Wait, did I talk to you about numerology this week?
No. You didn't. Did you have a conversation about numerology this week?
Yeah, it must have been with our tripod, Brittany.
She has two legs.
Yeah. The third person. Our triad.
Our third. There's a third.
We had a conversation about numerology too. What is your life path number?
I'm 5.
Oh. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Just know I'm 5.
Got it.
What are you?
I'm a 9.
Okay.
But the numbers 3, 2, 6 have been following me around a lot.
Oh.
I think I mentioned
yes.
The Last Grab Bag story, but I've been seeing it everywhere. And so I started doing research on it to see kind of what those numbers mean, but especially 326 as a whole number,
mm-hmm.
threes, but in cahoots with 26.
Okay.
Somewhere.
Like the time?
Yeah. So...
I have a time like that that haunts me.
Yeah.
It's 12:34.
It's dad time.
It's dad time. It is dad time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that always, I've been seeing dad time.
Yeah.
A lot.
He's thinking of you.
Yeah. I'm thinking of him too.
What I read about 326 was that it is, if you see a number like that, that you're constantly aware of, it's an angel number and it means that one of your angels is thinking of you.
Oh.
So.
Love that.
Like, and for me, I immediately think mom.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think there's something cool about like having something that resonates with you and mm-hmm. when you see it, it will snap you out of whatever kind of like mental mumbo jumbo you're like caught in and yep. will make you very present in that moment.
Yeah.
So. There's a little bit of numerology from two people who don't really know anything about numerology.
Hey, this whole podcast is a lot of things about two people who don't know a lot of things.
We're really flying by the seat of our pants here.
We do a lot of research in a short amount of time.
And boy, I gotta tell ya, this story, we're doing folklore today, yes. which this is my hill, I will die on it, is my favorite category.
I love that you love folklore so mm-hmm. much because it takes me quite a bit of time to get really invested into a story.
Okay.
But this week, I got in deep with my story, so I'm very excited.
I'm excited, too. I also fell in. So this actually was supposed to be my paranormal story this week.
I think I know what you're doing.
Yeah. I dug in too deep, and I was like, whoa.
Whoa.
Wait, let's back it up. We're going to shuffle this story to the back.
Yeah.
So... I think, though, you go first today.
Yes. And before you start your story, I want to officially guess, because I don't actually know what you're doing, but I think I know.
Okay.
All right. So my story this week is biblical.
Scary.
A horror story.
R.L. Stein wrote it.
So we're actually going to be talking about the Book of Revelation, which I know.
Oh, it made my armpit sweat, Tay. It did. I got clammy.
We need the football.
Oh, we did. We need to take a picture of what this is because nobody can see it except us. We're just waving our arms like a scarecrow.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the Book of Revelation and one specific tale in the Book of Revelation, which is the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Oh, my heart's... I'm hiding behind my microphone, like, just my...
I can only see Jenny's eyeballs peeping out from behind the top screen.
I'm very scared.
All right, so the idea of the Four Horsemen can be attributed to the Christian Bible. The horsemen were mentioned in the Old Testament first, which I was surprised. I thought that they were only in Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
But they are in Ezekiel and Zechariah, and then again in the New Testament in the Book of Revelation. So ooh. I'm going to be reading some scripture at you a little bit today. So in
take me to church, Mr. Sister.
You got it. In Zechariah chapter 6, verse 1 through 8, it says, "And again I looked up and saw four chariots coming out from between two mountains, mountains of bronze. The first chariot had red horses, the second chariot had black horses, the third chariot had white horses, and the fourth chariot dappled gray horses. Then I said to the angel who talked with me, 'What are those, my lord?' The angel answered me, 'Those are the four winds of heaven gone out after presenting themselves before the Lord and all of the earth. The chariot with the black horses goes towards the north country, the white horses go towards the west country, and the dappled ones go toward the south country. And when the steeds come out, they were impatient to get off and patrol the earth.' And he said, 'Go patrol the earth.' They are patrolling, so they patrolled the earth. Then he cried out to me, 'Lo, those go toward the north country have set my spirit at rest in the north country.'" And then Ezekiel lists the horses up as representing sword, wild beast, plague, and famine.
Mm.
So the first kind of mention of them in Zechariah, they mention kind of the 4 points of the... what's the word?
End times?
No, the... North, south, east, west.
What is the compass?
The compass.
Okay.
Jesus. Okay.
I'm playing charades over here.
Crying out loud. All right. So there's a lot of things in here that are like the four. So like the four points of the compass, the four elements, these four main like causes of death and destruction, which all tie into the four horsemen of the apocalypse. In Revelation 6, talks about the scroll in God's hand that is sealed by seven seals. I will probably cover the seven seals in a different episode, and I will get into those just a little bit later, but I think that that is fascinating.
It just makes me think of the Winchesters.
Yes, absolutely. So he opens the first four seals, which summon the four beings riding horses. These horsemen are set to bring divine apocalypse to the world as harbingers of the last judgment. They are going to be a red horse, a white horse, a black horse, and then a pale horse. So we'll talk about...
Spooky see-through horse.
Spooky see-through. Let's talk about like the different horses and then kind of what they represent. First, the first horse that comes out is the white horse. In Revelation 6, verses 1 through 2, say, "And then I saw the Lamb broke the one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying, as with the voice of thunder, 'Come.' And I looked, and behold, a white horse. And he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer."
Ooh.
Scholars believe that the being on the white horse could be a few different players of the apocalypse.
Okay.
So in early interpretations of this being, people actually believe that this is Christ, who is coming to, like, usher in the apocalypse.
Okay.
The most common interpretation of this horse is a disease. So,
Like this, pestilence.
Yes. So this is before that idea really comes about.
Okay.
So they think that this is like the spread of the Lord's word instead of the spread of disease.
Okay.
So I can see it. And because he's given a crown and he's on a white horse, all of those things, that imagery is very reminiscent of a savior.
I would almost prefer disease.
Oh my God.
Just kidding. Just trying to be dramatic. That is a lot less foreboding.
Yes.
Though, that it's just the word of Christ spreading across nations.
Right.
And not coronavirus.
Coronavirus. The second idea that the white horse is the Antichrist himself.
Ooh.
And this idea didn't come about until about 1866. And this is a common interpretation of evangelical churches. So they tend to look at it like the Antichrist instead of disease and plague. A third idea is that this is a type of a war, not necessarily a war between nations, but a war between people. So distrust between family, kind of just very general, granular wars between people.
I mean...
That's
kind of sounds like what's happening right now-ish.
We'll get to that.
Oh, okay, sorry. I'll just chill.
That is much more of a war, like, we'll see with the red horse.
Oh, okay.
So this is more familial. So, like, if you're at Thanksgiving dinner and you're fighting about the political, like, state of the world, that would probably fall under the white horse.
I mean, I'll know about your family, but...
We're fighting about it.
Okay. Yeah. We're kind of fighty people.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. We're not going to be quiet.
Grandmammy, you're wrong.
That's for damn sure. Oh, goodness. Okay. So, So infectious disease or the plague, this actually first appears around 1906, which I thought was fascinating because in the grand scheme of things, that is recent.
Incredibly recent.
Recent. This didn't come about until 1906. In a book written in 1916 called The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse by Vicente Velasco Ibáñez.
Beautifully done.
Thank you. he describes the white rider as having a bow and his arrows are dipped in bacteria. Yucky.
Gross. Listen, that's fine. Just like not the stomach flu.
Anything else.
Anything but the stomach flu.
I thought that was an interesting way to, like, give a reason to why he has a bow.
Yeah.
Because what else is the bow used for when it comes down to plague?
don't know.
But I guess we're just gonna dip it in some bacteria.
I feel like that was a leap, but it was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a creative license.
Yeah. Well, I think bacteria was like a new thing.
Yeah.
Back then.
In 1916, which would have been around the Spanish flu, right?
That was 2 years after the Titanic sank.
True. Look at us being historians.
Wow.
And shit. Okay, so the red horse is brought up in Revelation 6, verses 3 through 4. When he broke the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, come, and another. A red horse went out to him who sat on it. It was granted to take peace from the earth, and that men would slay one another, and a great sword was given to him. Most commonly associated with war between nations, or possibly a civil war. But the idea here is that there's bloodshed, and it's not just
a little
verbal debate back and forth. This is bloodshed.
Got it.
The red represents the blood to be spilled. Red is also described in some translations as being fiery, which is symbolic of destruction. Red also represents power and anger in most cultures.
Sure.
So that is why we associate the red horse with war.
Yeah, the red planet, Mars, yeah. God of war.
They actually brought that up too, but it was only in one of the things that I read, and I didn't want to get too much into like Roman deities.
Sure.
While
we're really getting confusing with our doctrine here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the black horse, which is famine, is in Revelation 6, 5 through 6. When he broke the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, come. I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand.
Ooh. And scales?
Yeah.
Oh, like Libra.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm thinking snake skin. Okay, go on.
No. Think weights.
Okay, got it.
I have heard something like a voice in the center of the four living creatures saying, 2 pounds of wheat for a day's wages, 6 pounds of barley for a day's wages, but do not damage the oil and the wine. I mean, same. Bro.
Who put oil in their wine?
But do not damage the oil and the wine.
Oh. Ooh. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Most interpretations conclude that the black horse represents famine. The scales would be used to weigh out food during times of famine. And the voice says to leave the oil and the wine alone, which are things that wouldn't be affected by locusts the same way that wheat and barley would be.
Oh.
And oil and wine are things that would really the only the rich would have. So the famine wouldn't affect the rich the same way that it would affect the poor.
Well, sure. Name a famine that did.
Right. There's not.
No.
So by leaving them alone, the rich would not suffer as much as the poor, which would increase the gap between the two classes, which is going to create more civil war.
Yeah.
And create a climate in which people are willing to kill each other.
Mm-hmm. For survival.
So lastly, we have the pale horse. In Revelation 6, 7 through 8, when the Lamb broke the fourth seal, I heard a voice of the fourth living creature say, come. And I looked and behold, an ashen horse. He who sat on it had the name Death. Mm. And Hades was following him.
Hades?
Yeah.
How did Hades get here?
Hades.
Who invited Hades to the Christian block party?
Christ. Apparently.
Well, apparently he just does whatever he feels like doing. We're just
picking and choosing our deities a little bit.
Listen, you're blurring the lines. I'm not comfortable. Pick a doctrine.
I was beside myself reading Hades here because I was never taught about Hades growing up in the Christian church, but we never read Revelation.
There are so many like religious sect, all the flavors of Christianity that do not include Revelations because it's the only part of the Bible that is prophecy.
Yep. Yeah. It's apocalyptic literature.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's all parables, just like the rest of the Bible.
Right. But this is the only thing that the Bible specifically says hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
Yeah. So I definitely grew up in one of the churches that was more treat your neighbor well. I didn't dislike the church that I grew up in. I disliked a lot of the ways that people took the word and made it their own and then decided to hate other people based on what they were taught and pick and choose verses to base
hate.
Hate.
The scripture is not bad. The men who interpret and teach the scripture are bad.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I really enjoyed, like, learning about scripture in a way that was based in love and kindness and treat other people the way you wanted to be treated. And it wasn't until I got older that I started questioning a lot of the way that I was being taught.
Sure. We have a lot of crazy... I don't want to say... Hold on. Let me back up.
Hello?
We have a lot of very passionate religious people in my family who are also equally passionate about the end times prophecy.
Ooh.
And it is something that they will discuss at length. And there may or may not have been a couple members that thought Barack Obama was the Antichrist.
Oh, 100%.
They would have died on that. Oh, yeah.
I can't roll my eyes hard enough.
No, me either.
So I thought it was important to kind of talk about Revelation now and talk about some of the apocalyptic literature because of how many cults base their ideas on Revelation.
It's fear-mongering.
Absolutely. So I never read Revelation. Now I'm very interested in actually reading it. I might.
I very recently have dug in very deep to Revelations.
Okay.
And it's... Oh, but I'm excited. I'm excited to hear what you got to tell me. Tell me everything.
Okay, all right. So let's talk about the pale horse. Hades was following him. Authority was given him over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword and with famine and with plague and by the wild beasts of earth. This is the only horse that is explicitly given a name. So this is the only one that we don't debate over what this means.
Mm-hmm.
Death does not have a weapon in his hand like the other three.
Why would he need it?
Because he is the weapon.
Yeah.
The color of the horse is written as pale, but the Greek name for this can be translated to a greenish-yellow hue. Mm. It can also represent the colorless, pallid color of a corpse.
Mm. Chartreuse.
What?
It's not. It's like a bright, gross pea green. Anyway, it's okay. A color. Right. It was a joke. It didn't land. Move on.
So, chartreuse is one of those Mandela effects that some people have a different idea of what chartreuse is.
Some people think it's red.
I thought it was red.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I thought it was like a purpley...
Oh.
Like...
Oh, like red. Vermilion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, when you said chartreuse, I was like...
Oh, no. She green. She like a yellow peacock green.
I have to, like, make that... fact new in my head.
I'm putting in a special request for us to cover the Nelson Mandela effect, because that I was one of those people. I thought he died in prison.
Okay.
It's
I don't think I did. I think I don't think I ever thought that he was dead.
Oh, I super did.
Okay. I will leave that one up to you. Okay. You take the reins.
I'll cover it because I super fell into it. It's gonna be more of like a psychological thing or right. Like hive mind. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
Okay. Anywho. Death may be the most mysterious, as he doesn't really have a description. He is either there to kill or to collect the souls of those who have been killed.
Mm.
The wild beasts of the earth could refer to what comes after the humans. You know?
But wait, there's more.
Dinosaurs come back and rule the earth.
Oh!
We don't know.
Don't call it a comeback.
Yeah. Or it can refer to after all the humans are gone, the animals are taking the earth back for themselves.
As they should.
Do it.
Yeah.
Hopefully the white rhinos are still around to take back the earth.
Oh.
A common understanding of the coming of the four horsemen is that there will come a time when the world will end due to a combination of wars, famine, disease, and things of the like.
Hmm.
So, I thought we could just talk about some of the things that have happened so far in the world that people think are attributed to one or more of the four horsemen.
Okay.
So, many Christians believe that the end times are upon us now.
Aren't they always?
I mean, truly. Or they've already been here and we're just waiting for the final shoe to drop. Here are some things that people either attribute to one or multiple of the horsemen. The Crusades, the white horsemen due to the conquering of other nations. So that goes back to it not being about disease. It's about something else.
Yeah. Well, whose fault was that? Who commanded the Crusades?
The bubonic plague.
Our old friend.
To the White Horsemen as well, but this time with the idea of disease and plague.
Mm-hmm.
Coronavirus.
Coronavirus!
Has killed 500,000 people worldwide.
Oh, it has?
A little over, yeah.
500,000?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought we were in the millions.
Millions of people have been diagnosed, but 500,000 have been killed.
That's a pretty hefty chunk of people. That's, I mean, not when you consider that we have 7 trillion people on the planet.
Right.
But, like, it is a very big deal.
Yeah. It is not anything to bat your eyelashes at. What's the... I don't know what I'm looking for.
No.
Anyway.
It's nothing to... I know exactly what you're trying to say, and it won't come out of my mouth either.
Anyway.
Continue on. Jesus, God. Peter and Paul and the rest of the kids.
Oh, God. Okay. Any war ever. But most specifically World War I and World War II.
Yeah, those are nasty ones.
Yeah, can be attributed to the Red Horsemen. In Matthew chapter 24, verses 6 and 7, Christ states, "And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom." The Great Famine of the 14th century can be attributed to the Black Horsemen. In 1315 to 1322, Europe was hit with the Great Famine. In 1315, the crops were so bad that they weren't able to harvest them, but because the crops were bad, the cattle and sheep numbers fell by 80%, and 1 million people died.
My God.
A lot of people died. And it was spread throughout Europe, like as far as Russia was affected by this famine.
We live in, like, such a comfy, cozy reality.
Oh, 100%.
I can't even imagine. Like, I was minorly tripping when I would go to the store and they would not have bell peppers when coronavirus became, like, a thing.
Yeah.
I was like, how do we make fajitas? Like, I can't even imagine not being able to have the kind of agricultural support to even, like, do livestock.
Right. When coronavirus first started happening and people were panic buying, I was not super panicked, and my husband was panicked.
Oh.
So he went out and panic bought Campbell's chicken noodle soup.
Ew.
When my signature dish is chicken noodle soup.
That you can make out of, like, 5 ingredients.
Absolutely. And I always have those 5 ingredients.
And on God, it is the best chicken noodle soup I've ever had in my life.
I can make chicken noodle soup at the drop of a hat. I always have everything that I need.
Your cabbage soup, too. You make that damn good cabbage soup.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I haven't made that in a while, but one is good.
It's good stuff.
I love a soup.
Yeah.
Pretty good at a soup.
I miss fall. It is 95 degrees outside.
It's too hot.
I hate it.
I don't love summer clothes.
I don't either.
I never feel my best bad bitch self in the middle of summer.
No, me either.
There's nothing that I look cute in.
No, I always feel like there's more power in, like, combat boots and a leather jacket.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Give me a chunky cardigan with leggings and
cute little glasses because you don't put your contacts in that day in a messy bun.
Yeah.
A vibe.
And knee-high, thigh-high boots.
Ugh. Summer is no vibe. Can't wear makeup because it clogs your pores and you sweat it off your face and your hair never looks good because it's either oily or frizzy.
And it's humid.
It's awful. People don't think of Indiana as being humid. It is swampy as shit up here.
Right, but we don't have any of the fun swamp monsters.
No! Or a lake.
No.
No. Or we have lakes, but they have leeches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's rough here, guys.
Boy. But boy, anyway, are we miserable.
About the Great Famine that killed 1 million people.
I hate Indiana.
Man. Okay. So the last 3 seals to be broken, which I'll go into more detail probably eventually when I cover all of these, but I didn't want to just stop with the first 4. What fun is that?
Right.
So the 5th seal is the Great Tribulation, and this judgment encompasses Christians who will be martyred for their faith in Christ during the Great Tribulation by not bowing down to the Antichrist.
Oh, that section of my family loves to talk about the Great Tribulation.
Really?
Oh my God. The Left Behind series was taught to me when I was a young child.
I read the Left Behind series of my own free will.
It is a terrifying book series.
I didn't read the whole thing. I think I got to the book Nikolai.
Oh.
And I remember my dad being like, you know that this is not real, right?
God, I love Brad. And my mom was like, you better repent.
Right.
Because this is going to happen.
Kirk Cameron was in the movies.
I didn't see the movies. I had already, I moved on to Harry Potter by that time.
And they were like, witchcraft.
My family was like, she's a lost cause.
100% though. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they are not bowing down to the Antichrist, and they're not submitting to the global economic system that forces all people on the earth to receive the mark of the beast. Their deaths place them in good company of the righteous throughout the ages.
Mm.
So they're basically like, I would rather die than bow down to
a bank.
Yeah. So all those yeehaws
got cash buried under a willow tree.
They're like, it's for Christ.
It's for Jeebus.
All right, sit down, Cletus.
I know. Cletuses for Jesuses.
Oh my God. No. That's the title of the episode for sure. All right. The sixth seal is natural disasters. I hope I live to see this point in time.
You are live. What are you talking about? You're in it.
Natural disasters?
Australia burnt to the ground.
That's true. So my theory is that 2020 is the end of times.
Yeah. Have you seen the theory that the Mayan calendar
is off?
Yeah, and that it's actually like 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm into it.
I mean, I believe it. We're getting into some conspiracies that I can actually put my way behind.
Listen, a girl can dream, can't she?
What kind of fucked up shit does that mean that I'm like looking forward to natural disasters and the end of times?
I think of all of the time in the entire world history that you could have been alive, and you're alive during the apocalypse? Like, what a privilege.
Count yourself blessed.
Yeah.
Hashtag blessed.
Too blessed to stress.
I'm too stressed to worry about the apocalypse.
Too many mundane things to be stressed about.
Right. Okay, so Revelation 6, verses 12 through 17. And I beheld, when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of the heavens fell into earth, even as the big fig tree cast her untimely figs, and she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heavens departed as a scroll when it was rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?
Ew. Oh.
I know.
Ominous.
I
remember that,
I was like, shit, bro.
Well, damn.
Don't forget about Mr. Donald Trump hiding in a bunker about 2 weeks ago.
Listen.
So, Matthew 24, verse 29 says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, which was the fifth seal, shall the sun be darkened and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. The seventh seal introduces seven trumpets. With each sounding of a trumpet, the humankind is punished, and with all of the punishments getting worse. Finally, the seven angels with seven trumpets have vials that they pour out into the followers of the Antichrist, of the wicked on earth, and the vials are plague. And that is the end of the seven seals. And after that is when Jesus comes back down to earth and sees what's left.
What does he do with it? With what's left?
I think he just ends whatever is left, because everybody who is just and follows him has already died.
Here's my whole thing. Just the Bible doesn't have a very good plot.
I don't know if it's meant to have a good plot.
Well, it's just not a very good book, is
Listen,
it?
Listen, I don't think it's bad. I think it's good to say the general theme is love thy neighbor. And I think so much of that has been taken out of context and strewn through translation after translation after translation that have been white men making this scripture what they want it to be in their time.
To put them in a position of power.
Right.
And negate anybody else who would dissent.
Right. And we're at such a point where if we looked at whatever original scriptures we have, if any, what would those translations look like now? If we didn't look at the translation before it.
It's the world's longest, most complicated game of telephone.
Right. We don't know what that original scripture says. We can't know.
No.
So it's hard for me to say it's garbage now when I think that there are themes and ideas that are legitimate, but there are specific words that have been tweaked and translated incorrectly, like homosexuality,
mm-hmm.
when...
That is not the Greek word.
That's not the Greek word.
Mm-mm.
And...
It's pedophilia.
Yep.
Is the Greek translation of the word that in... Hold on. If
1942.
Yep. Thank you. I knew it was the 1940s.
Yep.
Some bitter old white guy decided that it meant...
Homosexuality.
Homosexuality. And it's mm-hmm. not. It's about thou shalt not lay with a child.
Right. And I think the original,
the OG.
Let me rephrase. What I think doesn't matter. But what he was looking at, that scripture may have looked like a man shall not lay with a boy.
Well, back then, the Greeks had that practice.
Right, the apprenticeship.
Yes, where they would take a young boy from an impoverished family, teach them the trade, and this man would lay with him.
Rape.
Would rape and sodomize a child mm-hmm. because it was ingrained in the culture.
Right.
And so they tried to get away from that culture, as they fucking should.
Right.
And instead, somebody took that and twisted it. And has since waged a war on
homosexuality
for years and years and years and years.
Decades.
Centuries.
Right. So the issues that I have with the Bible come from the translations.
Come from the people interpreting the Bible, not the Bible itself.
Exactly.
Not with God himself, right. herself, themself.
Yep. Normalize pronouns in 2020.
What's God's pronouns? Just the creator. He's like, please don't talk to me.
Who do you think you are? Okay, so that was my story, The Four Horsemen. I'm sure we will talk about Revelation and the end of times many, many times.
Probably in the near future.
Years and years and years of us doing this podcast.
Yes, I'm sure. You did an excellent job.
All right.
I feel so bad because I interrupted you 5,000 times, but I was deeply invested.
No, I'm glad that you did. I'm going to sit back and... listen to a beautiful story now that I don't have to stress about mine anymore.
Well, listen, this story ain't so pretty.
Great.
Hey there, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Noelle, and we are the hosts of the Quite Unusual Podcast.
A podcast about all things spooky, paranormal, strange, and unusual.
Are you a fan of all things macabre?
Do you love learning about unsolved mysteries?
Are you crazy for cryptids?
Then we think you might like the Quite Unusual Podcast.
On Quite Unusual, we talk about all the terrors and trepidations in the known world and beyond.
From the world's most nefarious cults to serial killers.
Hollow Earth theory to paranormal activities.
Local ghost stories to UFO phenomena.
Government conspiracies and, of course, unexplained events.
Nothing is off limits, but everything is quite unusual.
So sit back and get weird with us.
Find us on social media at Quite Unusual Pod, and you can email us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com.
You can listen to us for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And as always, remember to celebrate the strange.
And keep it unusual.
Bye.
Why don't you do me a big solid and guess what I'm doing?
Oh, are you doing the Dibbit Box?
I am not.
What are you doing?
I'm doing the Legend of the Bell Witch.
Yay.
the glow on your skin.
Every time Jenny was like, I don't know what I'm doing for my paranormal. I'm like, you're doing the Bell Witch.
Nope. And I tried.
Like, no, I'm not. And I was like, okay.
Oh, whatever. So I'm doing her now.
Oh, yay. Okay. I was for sure thinking we were doing Dibbit Box today.
I promise you it's coming. Fun fact, the Dibbit Box was going to be my very first paranormal episode.
Wow, that is biggin.
It's been on the spreadsheet for a while.
Our favorite paranormal investigator, Zach Baggins, that ding-dong ding-a-ling, decided to open the Dibbit Box.
Of course he did.
This week.
He said, this week?
Yeah. It got aired this week. They're doing Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, Ghost... What is it? Ghost Adventures?
I don't even know.
I think it's Ghost Adventures. They're doing a quarantine edition. And
what is getting locked in with a ghost?
I haven't watched to be able to tell you. All I know is that when they're all like walking to the camera and it says Ghost Adventures, they're all wearing masks.
Oh my God.
But yeah, that
like thing. For asbestos or for like coronavirus?
Probably for coronavirus, but they should also beware of asbestos.
Listen, those don't asylums have lead out. Paint. Yeah.
Don't count it out.
No. Don't rule it out.
I could get you.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Tell me about the Bell Witch.
Oh, I'm going to. This is something I have like a fascination with colonial America.
I don't think I've ever known this about you.
I am horny for the Johnny Appleseed Festival that we have here locally.
I just thought that was because fall times, but
okay. I also do love fall times, but I love the idea of colonial America, although very problematic in its own right.
Everything is problematic.
We are evolving. We have grown since then. And there are going to be parts in here. I have like warnings that
they're problematic.
We
understand that.
But I love the idea of people so fed up with a regime that they just move to a whole ass continent and settle and build a life.
Oh.
It's a revolution. I'm really into it.
I can sing you the entire Hamilton soundtrack from start to finish.
Oh, I love it. So. It's quiet uptown. Anyway, it was not quiet up this town, let me tell you. So, nestled on the outskirts of Nashville lies Adams, Tennessee, once known as Red River. Like thousands of other small towns in the USA, it is a quiet, peaceful, and easily overlooked place by travelers. Looking past its humble exterior, however, you will find a dark and very problematic past. It tells the story of a haunting over 200 years old, which still continues to this very day. In 1804, John Bell, along with his wife, Lucy Williams Bell, and approximately 10 other families, began an arduous trip from Edgecombe County, North Carolina, to Red River, Tennessee. Over the next several years, the Bells would become successful farmers and prosper in their new home. Widely respected and well-liked by the larger community, a scandal would arise around 1815 that would call the character of John Bell into question and ultimately lead to a catalyst that is said to have allowed evil to enter his life.
Uh-oh.
It was something a little not great.
Shady. A little suspect.
A little shisty at best. One of the other groups that also made the move with the Bells was the Bats family.
Bats.
Like flat bat? Like flat bats.
Okay, cool, yeah. Cool. Vampire bats.
Yeah. Okay. Or baseball, I guess, whatever. A bat.
We're immediately gonna think bats.
Yes.
As an animal.
The Bats came to hate the Bells. A traumatic farming accident seriously injured Frederick Batts, the head of the household, and as a result, he would spend the rest of his life physically impaired.
Ooh.
As Fred was no longer able to work, the familial situation became desperate, and soon they were forced to sell parts of the property in order to survive and make ends meet.
Ooh.
Some of this land was purchased by John Bell, a transaction that would result in a lifelong feud between the two groups.
So, the Bell... impaired Mr. Batts. Mr. Batts couldn't provide for his family anymore.
A farming accident.
Okay.
Happened to Batts.
Okay, but it wasn't caused by Bell.
No. Okay. Bell didn't do it.
Got it. I was like, he hurt him and then he bossed him in his life. Like a dick.
You don't put it past him, okay, honestly.
All right.
So
sorry.
Belle bought some of the land. Frederick's wife, Kate, accused Belle of exploiting their desperate situation as he had bought the land at far less than what it was worth. She swore to Belle that she would make him and his family pay for this misdeed, further escalating the tension between the two families. Oh, and I have warning, descriptions of a very problematic transaction ahead.
Got it.
Belle had also purchased a young slave girl from Frederick's brother, Benjamin Batts. John Belle deemed the girl too young to leave her mother, however. What a nice guy. Mm. And decided to leave his new slave with her mother for a little while longer.
What was she, like 8?
She was 7.
Oh, baby.
She was very young.
Baby can't even take care of herself.
I know. I know. And, like, let's not fucking buy people. Anyway. When he eventually came back to collect her, Benjamin abnegated the entire sale, now proclaiming that he no longer wished to sell or that her value had increased more than the initial purchase price. After much bickering, John Belle sold the child back to Benjamin for $150 after having purchased her for $100 before. In today money dollars,
yeah,
that is $3,287.10.
Oh, sweet baby.
I know. It's horrible.
It's making my eye twitch.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate
it. Oh, your eyes are watering over there.
I hate it.
It's bad.
Okay.
It's bad. In selling the girl back to the Batts family for more than the purchase price, he once again extorted more money from the clan. And at this point, Belle believed the issue was concluded and hoped that his dealing with the Batts were once and for all truly over. He vowed to never do business with them again. It always ends up really bad. However, this was not the case. Shortly after the deal with the child was settled, and unbeknownst to John Belle, Benjamin Batt traveled to Springfield and filed a lawsuit against Belle for extortion. Belle had no idea that the lawsuit was even filed, therefore did not attend the hearing. Failure to appear in court to contest the claims, the case was ruled in favor of Benjamin Batts. The matter was brought before the church in Red River, a meeting with the High Council, or whatever the Christian judicial system was in the 1800s. John Belle was excommunicated from the church for his transgressions against the Batt family.
And he didn't even know.
He didn't even know. He was a reverend, too.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So some say that the imposed distance from the Belle family and the grace of God opened the door for evil to permeate their life.
I see.
So due to her husband's immobility and inability to provide financially for the family, Kate Batt soon became the head of household. And let me just start off by saying this. I love Kate Batts.
All right.
I love her. In a time when women's only contributions were household servitude and breeding, Kate's obligation to become the man of the house. These are colonial words.
I know.
Yeah.
Yuck
indeed. Kate's obligation to become the man of the house quickly deemed her an outcast. Her loud, abrasive, spiteful, and boisterous nature did nothing to help her social standing. Due to some strange behavior in the church, it was quickly suspected that she was affiliated with the devil and engaging in witchcraft.
Yeah.
Eclectic behavior, such as always arriving late to community functions, her habit of fully saddling a horse, because it was absolutely unheard of for a woman to ride horses any other way than side saddle, because it was morally indecent to spread your legs. Right.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Her inclination to bring, everywhere she went, she brought an entourage of no less than 3 slaves. They were always with her. And, like, in a time when, like, they weren't, like, she would bring them to church. She would bring them to the market. She would bring them to wherever the fuck she went. She just always had them with her. Obviously, that this did not help her social standing.
Sure.
She once arrived at a church revival, and instead of entering through the quiet side doors, she made a grand entrance in the middle of the service, arriving late as usual. A man was in front of the altar on all fours, attempting to receive Christ. I have in my notes, don't ask me what that means. That's just what the historians said, and it sounds like kind of sexy, but also like something a zealot would do.
Right. Absolutely.
Kate walked in with her enslaved groupies, And instead of politely snagging a pew in the back, Kate popped a squat on the worshiping gentleman at the altar.
Oh,
he yelled out, thinking that he was being overcome with the power of Christ and that he had went blind as her hoop skirt had blocked out all the light. The priest commanded her to remove herself from his back, but she simply replied, "No, no bother. He's becoming closer to God."
I love her.
Very clearly, Kate created quite a stir wherever she went, and the disdain from the community was profound. The community came to a strong and incorrect assumption that the tragedy which befell Kate's husband was punishment from God for practicing witchcraft and worshiping the most evil one. Uh-huh. Although none of the villagers were brave enough to confront her directly, but they didn't want the smoke.
I don't want to get turned into a toad.
Right. They're like, I don't want to tangle with her. Like, she's awful, but like, I'm not going to say anything.
We're just
going to
talk shit about her behind her back.
That's exactly what they did. They chose to avoid her altogether, and it seems that she was far more intimidating than what they were willing to deal with. So, a while after the Bell and Bat family kerfuffle, John Bell was out working in his field. While hard at work at his chores, the patriarch spotted something very strange. It was a large creature about the size of a wolf with the body of a large dog covered in black fur and the head of a rabbit. Repulsed by the abomination, John drew his musket and shot at the creature. When he pulled the firearm away, he checked to see if he had shot his target, but it had disappeared with no trace of it ever being there. There was no blood, no bullet, no tracks. Not wanting to alarm his family, he kept this incident to himself, and it was said that shortly after this experience, the real trouble of the Bell family began.
Ugh.
So, during the evening hours, the family members, the Bells, began hearing the sound of stones being thrown against the exterior of the house. Despite constant vigilance, no perpetrator was ever found. And after a good while of this activity, Bell assumed it was the work of the Bat family. That was until the sound started to come from inside of the home.
Good old-fashioned haunting.
Good old-fashioned hauntings. They would hear rocks hitting the inside of the window panes. Large bumps, bangs, scraping on the walls. The sound of rats gnawing on furniture could be heard at all hours of the night, but the family was never able to find the source of the disturbances, and they greatly suffered as it affected their sleep. Despite the frustrations, the family tried their best to ignore it. Soon, however, the activity would escalate to physical attacks. I feel like this is a good point just to remind everybody who may be listening of the three stages of a demonic presence.
Yeah.
Infestation.
Yep.
Oppression.
Uh-huh.
Possession.
Yep.
Demons are like...
clockwork.
Like, they're like a growth on the soul. So, like, you find it early, you treat it aggressively. One night, the 14-year-old daughter, the oldest daughter, Elizabeth Betsy Bell, was once again woken by the sounds. However, this time when she went to investigate, she found that her long golden hair had been tied in knots around her bedpost.
Oh.
Unable to get up, she was then slapped over and over by an unseen force. The family responding to her screams found Betsy with red hand-shaped welts all over her face.
Oh my God.
It wasn't long after this incident that the younger sons of the family also began to sport the same red hand-sized welts. Not wanting to air their dirty laundry, because God forbid, and fearing risking the reputation further in the community, the Bells kept all of this to themselves.
Oh, sweet babies, that's not what you do.
No. They began fervently praying and begging to be released from the evil that was tormenting them to no avail. Over the next few weeks, visual apparitions started to pop up. The slaves that the family owned reported seeing strange birds and animals in the field, including a donkey in which some of the slaves claimed could talk.
Okay.
While walking in the field, Betsy saw the apparition of a girl in a green dress hanging from her hands by a tree limb before disappearing without a trace. This activity escalated daily, and soon the terror and lack of sleep became too much for the family to handle on their own, and they reached out for help. Bell confided in his friend and neighbor, James Johnson, nearly begging for help, and his friend readily agreed. Good neighbor. Johnson and his wife arrived at the Bell home soon afterward and prayed with the family to rid the house of the evil infesting. One evening, Johnson demanded to know the name of the entity, and a disembodied voice was heard to say, Kate. After several nights of trying unsuccessfully to cleanse the home, Johnson advised Bell to reach out to the wider community, and reluctantly, John Bell agreed.
All right. News gotta of, get help.
Time to call in the big guns, bud. Yeah. You got talking donkeys, you got hanging girls. News of the haunting spread quickly and far wider than anybody anticipated. Many people from surrounding areas and some from quite far away came to visit the Bell family farm to witness the specter's activity. The entity, who was initially quiet, would later have no qualms about speaking up and making its presence known as a disembodied voice from the corners of rooms. Eventually, the story of the Bell family haunting became so prevalent that word soon reached Army General and future United States President Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson decided to take a small portion of his troops and pay a visit to the family home and make camp there for a few days, just to see what's up.
That is a great use of taxpayers' dollars.
Did they pay taxes back then? I don't know. I don't know how taxes work now, let alone then. So, on the way there, one of Jackson's men was being a typical a-hole dude.
Great.
And was bragging. Chad. So Chad pulled out a bunch of silver bullets that he had brought with him. And was talking.
Was he Van Helsing in disguise?
He was talking all kinds of ish about how he was going to find the witch and he was going to shoot her dead and he was going to be an American hero. And so just as they were about to cross the property line, the wagon wheels seized and they could not move an inch. They fiddled with the wagon wheels, whipped the horses to bleeding, and yet the wagons would not move.
Was that the horse's fault?
I know. It's problematic.
The things that I'm finding trouble with here are probably on the lesser scale.
There's a demon witch in the house, but yes, the horses.
Me.
I agree. It made me very sad, too.
So many people on the Facebook post think I'm Wisteria.
You are. It's because you are. You sweet baby. Baby chicky nuggy. So Chad was out here talking shit. The wagons wouldn't move.
Sorry, that was the wine glass on my teeth. Like I'm 18 years old, can't drink wine.
So they were wasted, like time's a waste in here, bud. So just as they were about to give up, Jackson mumbled out loud about how Chad was acting like a douche nug and said like an apology for his bravado. And a disembodied voice from the bushes rang out and said, "You may now pass." And the wagon wheels unseized and they just carried on their merry way. As soon as they got there, they, despite their initial plans to stay for a week or so, they were only able to stomach one night at the Bell's house.
Wow.
And quickly made their way back to Nashville the very next morning.
National heroes right there.
In fact, Jackson is reported to have said, "I would rather face the whole of the British Army than spend another night at the Bell house."
Damn, dude.
Right. The boy was scared. He was a little spooked.
Yeah.
Not every member of the Bell family received the disdain of the Bell Witch, however. Lucy Bell, John's wife, was treated in quite the opposite manner. In 1820...
Kate had a favorite, didn't she?
Boy, did she. She loved her some Lucy Bell.
Why are you so obsessed with me?
She was like, "Girl, your man ain't shit." Why you ain't leave him?
Your man ain't shit.
So, Lucy was diagnosed with a severe case of pleurisy, which is a kind of respiratory something or other, in 1820. And there was a strong suspicion from the doctors that she would not survive the illness. So while she was bedridden, Kate's disembodied voice would often sing comforting gospel hymns from the corners.
Oh my God.
And would leave hazelnuts.
Good old hazelnuts.
Hazelnuts and grapes on her bed, which would materialize from thin air. She brought her like a little charcuterie tray and she was like, "Here, honey.
Eat up, get straight.
Feel better." And then Lucy's condition did improve and she made a full recovery.
Kate doing the most.
Doing the most. But as Lucy was getting better, John Bell was rapidly declining.
Oh, well.
And on the morning of December 20th, John Bell was found dead as a damn doornail in his bed. A strange, foul scent was found coming from his mouth, and a vial of unknown cloudy liquid was discovered nearby with his medicines, giving off the same odor.
I just got full-on body goose chills.
Speculation as to who poisoned Bell was rife, and when it was implied that Lucy may have been responsible, Kate's disembodied voice spoke up yet again, and she said, "I fixed his medicine last night and gave him a big dose of it. He'll never get out of that bed again."
This bitch has big dick energy in the afterlife.
Big witch energy. She raised a glass to Kate Batch because she's a badass. For the first time in U.S. history, an actual documented death certificate, the reason for death was listed as a supernatural entity. His death certificate.
Wait, was this, did you say the first time?
It said the first time. It did not specify the last time.
That's what I was about to ask. Has there been another one?
I do not know. But John Bell was the first.
Wow. On his death certificate, it says supernatural.
Supernatural
causes.
Entity.
Entity. What?
Whoa.
That is wild. Oh, my.
I want that on my death certificate, regardless of how I die.
Okay. I will have to get in with the coroner on that one.
Okay, call him.
I'll work on it.
Not content with simply killing John, Kate, in her, like, human body, made an appearance at his funeral services.
Wait a second. Kate's not dead yet?
Oh, no. The villagers are scared to talk to her.
Wait, so she's alive.
She's alive.
Cross town.
Doing her thing. Hanging out with her, like, groupies. Just being boisterous. Meanwhile, the Bells are over here because Kate's astral projecting into their house, throwing shit, killing people, breaking stuff, dragging people by the ankle.
Not put that together.
Kate's still around.
She came to his funeral.
Yes. Yes, she did. And not only did she go to the funeral, she sang, danced, laughed, and shouted drinking songs.
Oh, no. Girl.
She's a mess.
She's
a mess.
Imagine her family. They are just like,
what are they gonna do?
Please no.
I can't. After the funeral, everything kind of died down at the house. Everything seemed to get, like, a little bit better because
she's like, mission accomplished.
Right. Kate had achieved her goal of tormenting her enemy to death. The family thought themselves rid of the entire experience, and it was quiet for a while until Betsy received a proposal of marriage from a very well-respected young man in the community by the name of Joshua Gardner.
Oh my God, all my dreams have just come true.
It sounded so authentic. Oh my Lord. Sue.
I can't.
Soon after, Mr. Gardner and Betsy were affianced. Betsy saw that little girl in a green dress who was dangling from the tree, saw her again, except this time she was screaming and begging Betsy to call off the wedding.
Uh-oh.
Right, and every member of the family was like, you better do what she says.
100%.
Do you not remember the shit that went down last summer?
Right.
Call off the wedding.
Yep.
So she did.
Okay.
Smart gal.
We dodged a bullet.
A lot of times, spooky witches who haunt you are really just looking out for your best interests.
We're just trying to help you, sis.
Help me help you not fuck your future self.
Yep.
So, scared of the poltergeist return, poor, heartbroken Mr. Gardner left town and made his way to West Tennessee, and he was just, like, never heard of again. So, due to the scant record keeping of the day, we'll never know the truth regarding the claims of the Bell family or the rest of the community. The legend of the Bell Witch has far more twists and turns than, like, I could even try to begin. Like, this 6 pages is like the generic watered down Kroger brand of the Bellwitch legend.
It's a Pop-Tart without the icing.
It really is. There are, during this same time, children were disappearing and from miles around. And their bodies would all be found in one cave that was near the Bats' property. So there's the cave, there's the woods. I encourage everybody to research it on their own time.
You can still go there.
So it is 7 hours away from us.
It is.
It's within driving distance.
Weekend trip, friend.
You can go to the property. Uh-huh. You can go to the cave.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying we're going to do it, but, like, let's go do it. Okay, so research all of that on your own time if you found this a little interesting. There are so many. Like, this has become such, like, a permeating story in the culture of Adams, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. There's an entire historical society based on this, which is where 90% of this research came from, is the actual historical society pouring through all of the land deeds and the purchase and sell of slaves during the time. It's bananas. Bananas? Banana lambs.
A hazelnut and a banana gram.
What a fun snack. Hazelnuts and banana lambs. So, here's what we do know. It is possible that many events might have been fabricated to cover up the murder of John Bell. We do know that Lucy Bell was the baby sister of Mr. John Williams Jr., who, do you remember Kate Batts's maiden name?
Oh, okay.
John Williams Jr. was Kate Batts' father. So they were cousins.
Oh, okay.
Was John's death a conspiracy between Kate and Lucy? What would Lucy gain by subjecting her children to this? Because they were genuinely terrified.
Sure.
Did John's shrewd and immoral business practices earn him the ire of a witch who would spurn a legend as old as the town itself?
Tale as old as time.
We do know that the legend of the Bell Witch is enduring and has inspired books, projects, museums, and a film series, The Blair Witch Project.
Oh, shit. This is The Blair Witch?
This is The Blair Witch Project.
I am ashamed to tell you that I did not watch The Blair Witch until about 2017.
I watched it way too young and I was terrified.
My mom watched it, but she was full-blown witch anyway.
Right, she was like, my people!
Yeah, she was...
She was like, what a lighthearted feel-good movie.
Oh my gosh, the amount of movies that I should not have ever seen as a child but did. But Blair Witch, she was like, no, because she couldn't explain it to me. I think that was why she didn't want me to watch it as a kid.
It was the first found footage horror movie of all time, which has now become such a huge subgenre of horror.
I love a found footage.
I also love found footage. Did you see the remake of The Blair Witch?
No.
It is not as scary, and I think it's because it's the ominous feeling of the original Blair Witch Project, where there's only one monster, quote-unquote monster scene in that, and it's at the very end when she turns the corner.
Yeah.
Like, other than that, there's no...
It's all suspense.
That's all... That's something that really...
That is my kind of horror film.
Yeah. That's my kind of horror film, too. There's no real monster to be afraid. It's like Bird Box. Do you watch Bird Box?
No, I haven't yet.
That movie is crazy. And I'm just saying, Sandra Bullock did not walk down the runway of Miss Congeniality for y'all to be like, that's the Bird Box lady.
Oh,
no!
Honey, Practical Magic.
Oh.
Her crowning jewel of film.
Rosemary by your garden gate.
Plant lavender for love. Throw salt over your left shoulder and fall in love whenever you can.
I love it.
I have that written in my mom's handwriting. In a book.
You should get that tattooed.
I think I probably will.
Yeah.
I already have my mom's handwriting,
though. I love that. You can always have more. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not saying John Bell deserved it. I'm just saying he did kind of sound like a dick.
Yeah, 100%.
But that is the legend of the Bell Witch.
Wow. I'm so glad you did it.
Thanks. This really has absorbed probably 8 8 to 10 hours of my last 4 days.
So I started the research on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think for my second paranormal, or my first one, I can't remember which one.
Mm-hmm.
No, my second one. And I got about an hour into research and said, nope, I think Jenny's going to do this one. Because I was like, there's just so much. Oh my God. So I'm so glad that you did it.
Thanks.
Good job.
Thank you. That's a good one.
Yay.
So thanks for listening to Ookie Spooky Stuff again.
Yeah. Oh, I have a correction.
What'd we fuck up on? Tell me everything.
So last episode in True Crime, I mentioned that there was a book called Gift of Fear by David DeBecker. It is by Gavin DeBecker.
Ooh.
My bad.
Sorry, those V names, man.
Yeah. So we know a Dave Becker in real life. I think that's why I associated that. My bad. Gavin DeBecker. And wait.
Gavin Becker?
No.
DeBecker?
DeBecker, yeah.
Okay, got it.
And the Golden State Killer has said that he is guilty.
So he confessed.
He will not have a jury trial, and he will serve a gajillion life sentences for what he did. I believe he's doing 15 concurrent life sentences and 11 consecutive, or it might be the opposite of that.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. He will be in prison. I mean, he's like 100 years right now. So.
It makes me, there's a Black Mirror episode. Did you ever watch Black Mirror?
I watched like one or two episodes of it, but I just couldn't get into it.
There's an episode where like somebody is in jail and the prison, it's like a psychological thing because they put you in a VR world and subject you to a horrible, terrible life.
Ooh.
And then you die horrifically.
Oh.
And then you wake up and it's been like, they take you out of the virtual reality and it's been like 30 minutes, but to you, you've lived a whole life.
That sounds awful.
And that is how you serve your sentences. You relive the entire life of the person that you committed the crime against.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So.
Ooh, there was a video of a lady that she survived an attack and she's like screaming at him in court. And
that'd be me.
Yeah, same.
I would get held in contempt.
I know that they're playing the frail old man card. They're wheeling him in his wheelchair.
Oh, serial killers get old too. That doesn't mean you don't have to go rot in prison.
Right. Sorry.
Sorry.
Goodbye.
Forever.
Goodbye forever.
One of the worst serial. Can I give a little sneak peek?
Of course.
I'm not going to say who, but my next true crime is going to be a serial killer.
Oh, Mike, I was wondering when one of us was going to break the ice to a serial.
I watched a video on YouTube about the family members of the serial killer who went and met with the families of the victims.
Okay.
And
is it a TV show?
It is a TV show, but I watch it on YouTube.
Okay.
But yes.
There's a TV show I watched where it's a daughter of a serial killer, and she goes and talks with the victims.
It's the same show.
Okay.
Except mine is a different episode of the same show. So mine is not her dad.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Oh, I am also doing a serial killer, but I'm coming at it from a different way.
Okay.
So
stay tuned for the next true crime. It's going to be juicy.
Yeah, it's going to be a few weeks because we're still...
Oh, this is... Yeah, we just had a true crime come out. So hang in there for another whole cycle. If you love us, follow us on the social meds.
Yeah, if you can find us on Twitter, good luck.
We're
still trying to figure it out.
The Twitter saga is ongoing and... I'm not saying that I'm like riveted by how fantastic my customer experience has been with the Twitter help desk, but I can't be too mad because it is my own fault.
Somehow Jenny ended up being able to set up a Twitter account for us without either a phone number or email.
There's just no phone number or email associated with the Twitter account.
So if you've ever run into this before, if you could give us a little helpful hint.
Listen, here.
Please find us on Facebook.
Here is like the Matrix glitch that I found myself in. Where like, I don't know the password. and so I need to reset the password, but you can't reset the password without an email or a phone number, but you can't add an email or a phone number to the account without knowing the password.
We're in a cycle, a vicious cycle.
We're in a Twitter pickle right now. So you can follow us on Twitter. I'm sure we will be back soon.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. We'll find a way.
We can't be locked out forever. But you can follow us on Instagram. You can follow us on our Facebook group, which is
A Little Bit Grim Podcast.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fun going on in the Facebook group. And if you have a personal story that is true crimey or creepy.
Or disaster.
Yeah. You got sucked into a sinkhole somewhere. We'd love to hear about it.
If you're from somewhere else and you have like a cryptid wandering around, email it in to us.
For sure.
We want to know about it.
Yeah, you can do that at alittlebitgrim@gmail.com.
So, we hope you enjoyed. We will see you next time when we cover more A Little Bit Grim stuff.
Yeah, which is conspiracies. Or cults. I don't remember.
We do this all the time.
I know. We get these two flip-flops.
I think it's conspiracies. It's conspiracies.
Catch us next time for...
for some stuff that we talk about. So good to hang out with you. Enjoy your work day.
All right. Love you. Goodbye.